top freshly squeezed. Stop the fucking music. You listen to me. Oh, just kidding. How's it going, everybody? Nah, Wardlow didn't return, but I'm one of your hosts, Charlie, joined as always by the ultimate Von Gunta, the Landon Dickerson to my Eagles offense. How you doing, Duke?
So I'm covering the fumble on you?
On your number 69, whatever that means.
Hey, yo.
I guess it's better than 60. I'm not even going to say it. But today we're talking about AEW Full Gear.
We're talking about AEW Backlash.
Yeah. Guys, this was AEW Backlash. But AEW Full Gear 2025 edition, the 6th or 7th show. This was a 2019 show, right? So I think the 7th
paper. That sounds right.
6th? I don't know. What's math?
It's like the 6th or 7th show.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know which one it is, but this is a day one pay-per-view. It's one of those shows that we always kind of look back on. And yeah, today's show is a little different, guys. We just talk about the pay-per-view in general. Kind of just, it's different from our traditional.
I talk about it in corporeal, personally.
It's different than our traditional weekly show that we do. And if you guys don't know, this is our show for this week. So thank you for hanging out with us. And without further ado, we're going to get into the actual show. Briefly touching the results, Bang Bang Gang defeated Max Caster and Anthony Bowens, Big Bill and Brian Keith and the Outrunners. We had Boom and Doom defeat RPG Vice, and we had Eddie Kingston and Hook defeat the Warhorsemen. And then Duke, we went back to our trusted old, now 2-for-2 action here, where we had El Sky Team take on the Don Callis family for the CMLL Trios titles. 5 minutes left in the pre-show, and we knew damn well we're starting the show with this. So 2-for-2 in doing this. I think it's safe to assume going forward, this is going to be the way things go, and the pay-per-views are going to start off hot. Tony Khan has found a way to start the pay-per-views with his wrestlers in the ring, and for someone that loves, you know, having all of his timings on, I can't think of a more perfect way for him to start his pay-per-views. So he likes to waste no time, Duke, and this is, it doesn't get quicker than this.
If you end a match, even though there's not really that long of a cooldown period before the pay-per-view starts, you'd have to be like within 5 minutes anyway for it to really not feel that way, right? Because if you have 5 more minutes, you probably have enough time to like decompress before the next match a lot of times, you know what I mean? Unless it's like 20 minute matches back-to-back or something like that. But if you have like a quick 5 to 10 minute match as the show's flipping on and it's only like, it won't even feel like you had a 20-minute match to open the show because, yeah, for the people there, it'll feel that way. But on TV, if you just flip the show on and it's on, you know,
yeah,
it's gonna flow a little bit better from a television perspective. I am curious what the crowd thinks about this, what people that were actually there would think about this looking like it wasn't going to finish before the show started. Because I wonder what it looks like from their perspective, you know, like, does it look goofy as hell that there's like 5 minutes to showtime and we're starting a match?
Like, yeah, but it's just going to become the norm of you know that that's kicking off the match.
But I'm curious what the vibe is in the audience when that happens.
Yeah,
that's true. I'm very curious what people think. If you were there for either of these shows where they did this, let us know.
Yeah,
I'm very curious.
Did it improve your experience? Maybe you were just instantly excited when there's pyro going off mid-match.
Did it make you freak out? Like, holy shit, how are they going to get this match? And are we getting a sprint? Are we getting a fucking absolute diabolical long match? What's going on here? Or did it immediately tip to you that they weren't going to be going over? That it wasn't actually going to be a quick match? Like, because I remember we've done this twice now. I guess we won't do it the next time now because we'll just see it coming. But like, we were like, okay, how are they possibly going to end this match in 5 minutes without them just losing the titles? You know, like.
And then they took Mies to go out of the match. Okada wasn't there. And it's like, okay, we can kind of.
It's like, yeah, no, there's no way they're going to
see gonna, where they're
you know,
going here.
Go back and they're going to do the Okada shit in 5 minutes. It's just not happening, you know, like, so it's so, yeah, it's fine. I don't really care. It doesn't matter.
He's found a way to start his shows with the wrestlers in the ring. So.
It was a bit jarring the first time, but I don't actually, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter anymore.
That's what you realize when he does this stuff, is that it doesn't actually matter. And maybe it matters to some old heads that think that's fucking weird or something, but like, I don't know. Like, it seems fine
to me. Better be there when the pay-per-view starts. Apparently, that's the way it goes, I guess. But yeah, this was a pretty solid match that we had today. We don't have a lot of stakes going into this because, well, we've never seen these titles, and this was Neon's debut. I thought Neon looked pretty damn good. I thought Mascara Dorada looked good. The Takeshita and Okada shenanigans are great for when that civil war begins. This is just a fun, energetic way to start the match. Not a lot of emotional stakes for us.
But it's
just wrestlers we love.
It's cool to see Neon, not seen him before.
Yeah, I was impressed. Cool mask.
Yep. CMLL seems to have pretty good masks. I'll give it to him, you know? The other thing I think is another dimension that thing adds to, by the way, not to jump back, but it's just something that occurred to me right after we moved on, was it also adds this new element of, like, you want to buy the show now if you're watching just the pre-show on YouTube or wherever it's at, you know? Like, because if you're watching that pre-show and it goes off and you're in the middle of a match, you kind of want to see what the fuck happens.
Yeah.
I don't know if that actually makes anybody buy it, but it might.
It might, especially if they're already watching on HBO, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we get that where El Sky Team picks up the win with a Místico submission victory on Hechicero. We jump to Darby Allin versus Pac. So, pretty much of the match you'd expect here of Pac laying absolute waste to the corpse that is Darby Allin.
Yes.
And Darby Allin does that best. He makes you look like a million bucks. Wheeler Yuta got involved. Darby got the win. Or my bad. Pac got the win here after he cracked him over the head with the baseball bat.
Yeah, Wheeler ran out, distracted him, the ref being him, and then they backed him over the head with the bat.
So I noted here, Wheeler Yuta working for Pac, ? More on that later.
Yeah.
But again, Duke, I thought this was a solid start to the pay-per-view.
Mind blown, Darby lost this match, to be honest with you.
That is the big shock here, right?
Darby keeps losing all these singles matches we think he has to win. I guess he just doesn't have to win them. Is that what that's telling us? Like, maybe.
Yeah, sometimes maybe it just means, you know, because Darby's been on a really good streak here, right? So, but maybe that just means, you know, take a step back there, bud.
Let's compare him to, like, a video game character. Is he, like, a video game character that, like, every five wins, the game has to, like, skill-based matchmaking him and he gets a loss so that it can, like, because he can't get too hot because then he has
stick
to go
him
for
in
the
loser's
world title?
Queue for a little bit. Yeah, it happens.
Is that something that maybe happens in actual combat sports? You just go on streaks of bad losses for a while and you just don't recover? I mean, maybe it's realistic. I don't know. I'm asking because I'm curious, because I think it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, if he actually has to hit a fucking title match within, like, 5-6 matches of a streak of wins, you know, like, otherwise he just can't hold his style. Hear me out. His style is so violent and over the top and dangerous that he can't sustain it for 7-8 matches in a row without, you know, it catching up to him. So that's why he can't hold a championship for very long. But if he can win a championship within a couple of wins in a row, you know, like, then he can just really get a good streak going and maybe defend it a few times.
Get
if
it
that's
going.
The way that works, that could really, I mean, it sounds silly, but it might actually be really cool. Like, I don't know, like.
I'm up for it. So, yeah, I did like that aspect
think
of
about it.
It
would never get stale, literally, because you never would have a time when he's ever been boring. It would just be, he's having exciting matches, and all of a sudden he loses it. That
what do you think of Pac getting the big singles pay-per-view win?
He's probably deserved one for a while, I'm sure. Yeah. I can't think of the last one that he won that was big. I'm sure he has one this year, but I can't think of one. He's been in some big matches this year in singles too, I feel like, you know, ever since they brought him.
Yeah, he was there full gear day one. It was him versus Hangman, so.
Yeah, so I wish they used Pac more, but the fact that he's in the Death Riders right now, it's the most they've ever used him since we've watched, so, I mean, it's great for him, you know, like, so, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff there. We have a women's conglomeration match, essentially. We have a four-way tag here where the timeless love bombs of Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa win the match stipulation in their upcoming match.
The three of us, me, you, and Dart, when we sat down for this match, were like, what is the point of this match exactly? We couldn't even figure out the stipulation until damn near the end of the match, basically. Like, which is that the winner of this match got to, for their semifinal match, pick the stipulation. Am I get that correct? Like,
yes.
Weird fucking stipulation, but whatever, you know, like...
Weird also, stipulation.
I hate Four Corners tag matches. I just want to say that.
And
go ahead.
I toss this out there? We're falling into that trap again of putting a stipulation on every match of the pay-per-view. You don't need to do that. You don't need to do that. Darby and Pac, right? It was a singles match. That's fine. We don't need to do that. We don't need to add all these weird fucking stipulations to shit. Let them just go out there and wrestle. Let them do their thing. There was a lot of moving parts. In the end, I don't really think this match moved the needle one way or another. It was kind of just there. Biggest note I had, Harley and Willow matching gear equals finals, question mark? I don't know. I'm loving the team of Marina and Megan Bain. They fucking work together, man.
Yeah. Which is crazy because they weren't even going to be a team. You know what I mean?
But yeah.
Maybe that wrestling shows goes sometimes.
How great Megan Bain is with chemistry with other partners.
I think Megan Bain is just low key one of the best women's wrestlers on our roster right now. She might be used enough. You know, like
she might be. Okay. Brodito versus FTR.
Oh,
an absolute
shit.
Slobber knocker. One of the best tag matches of the year. Duke, take it away. What did you think of this match?
It was exactly what you would expect from what I'm going to just go ahead and say now. FTR does not have enough time. There's no shot in hell. I don't care what fucking matches they put on in the next 8 fucking weeks. It's not happening. This is Brodito's year. So you put that team. And I remember saying to you, there was a couple matches on this card where the power of the title reign could maybe overcome the fact that the FTR winning this is huge for other reasons. Which those other reasons didn't even end up playing into anything, which is even crazier. Yep. But
at least not yet.
As far as we know, yes. Currently, right now, we don't know. They could show up on Dynamite. We don't know, of course. You know, they may have saved that to not be a moment to take away from FTR's win at the pay-per-view. And that's fair, you know, because FTR are now matching with the Young Bucks for the most tag team title reigns of all time. So they're now in, you know, we have to have that match again now, of course, as we know, you know.
12-time champs, 3-time AEW tag champs.
And they just turned babyface and FTR heels right now. Fucking writes itself. You know what I mean? But anyway. So block that in for your tag team match at the next pay-per-view. But, you know. or maybe the next one after, because maybe they have to deal with the current shit they're dealing with before then. But, FTR continue to be wizards of in-ring psychology. And really, Bandido has been the best wrestler maybe in the fucking world this year, you know, just straight up. Like I would have to really look at the other people that are in contention from other companies. You know what I mean? Like, because in a year, fuck, he might win both. He might. Is that possible?
I don't know. Maybe.
Could he win best wrestler and best tag team this year?
Who knows?
It all depends on what you want to do with your awards, I suppose, right? Mm-hmm. But I just realized that because I think I have him penciled in for both right now. So I'll look at that in a minute. But
he's had a hell of a year.
He has had maybe the best year of anybody in AEW in both aspects of it. And what a run he's been on. And I honestly can't believe that, you know, it ended the tag team title run because of how brilliant that it's been. And we'll talk about it in a second, but obviously the match itself was insane. It was as well wrestled as it can be. You had two, absolutely, really good at what they both do. Bandido is obviously one of the most athletically gifted wrestlers that we've ever seen. And Brody King might just be in contention for top three, top two big man in AEW, like because of how good he is. Because he's proven now, he's had like 4 different tag partners, I feel like, across his time in AEW at this point. And they've all been pretty damn good, you know, like,
yep.
So maybe 3, but at least 3. Like, so at this point, I'm pretty confident that these two guys, whether they stay together as a tag team or go their separate ways, they're both going to be fucking fine no matter what. Brody King could waylay this into a monster singles run, you know, going for like the
absolutely
TNT championship or something, you know, like maybe not with Mark having it, but like maybe he goes after Okada. They have history, you know. Maybe he's back in the C2 again this year. You know, there's so many different angles you could go with them now, and that's what's so brilliant about this now is that, like, even though I didn't want them to lose the titles, I thought maybe they had done enough just with the aura of their title reign, because nobody ever for a single second was ever mad that they were kept retaining these. Everybody was so happy that they were still the champions, but we saw teams along the way that were like, maybe they could win, you know, and this was the one that it was just too difficult. FTR have been on such a run as well. I mean, if anybody was going to be in contention for it besides Brodito, it would be FTR. You know, they've had as good of a year, you know, so it's just like it's so difficult for me, but I it's and this is why they put this match on, Charlie, because now this conversation is fucked, because now they've met in the ring and it was fucking insane. And so which team is better? Who God only knows, you know, like
that is true. That is true. Yeah, man. I mean, FTR, their heel work was on another level in this match. And to counter that, Brody and Bandido were the ultimate fucking baby faces.
Dude, Bandido this was, selling this was, in this match.
This was a classic tag team match. And in a show that kind of started off with, you know, solid to good, and then the last match being, you know, right? We get to this point where we're searching, we're seeking something. Bring us to that AEW quality we know and love. Bring us there. Boy, oh boy, did they fucking do it. And of course, it's the tag teams that do it. Yeah, I really loved every single second of this match. This felt like the riding of momentum of Brodito running into this wall, that there was a chance we believe they could actually beat him because they've beaten everyone, including FDR, already. I was on the edge of my seat. I honestly was excited about the result. I was a little shocked about the result, even though, you know, 3 months ago you put that on paper. We're like, yeah, we're picking FTR every day of the week. But that's the title where
they intentionally kept them and the Young Bucks away from these guys on purpose until they wanted to throw them in there. And then they threw them up there. I think they were both in the, it was like a four way or something like that, or right. Or something like that. At the pay-per-view. Like that, yeah. And that's when the only time they've touched them in the Bucks this year, I believe. And I don't think they faced the Bucks in a singles or straight up. Did they, or did they do it on a Dynamite? Maybe. Either way, I don't think they beat the Bucks this year. Did they? Other than that one match. No, Brodito. Other than that one match where they were all in a four-way or five-way, whatever that was, I don't think they've straight beaten the Bucks, have they? I don't remember.
They beat them in the tournament.
You're right. You know what? You're right. That's why.
And that was the same tournament where these guys had the 30-minute draw. So,
correct.
You know, it was the follow-up to that.
That's right. That's
just,
why.
Just outstanding.
You didn't
man.
Need
it was
to
truly,
have them face the Bucks because they already did. Yeah. You're right.
It was that's truly why. Just outstanding fucking work to get to this spot. And let's talk about this title reign.
100%.
And I know sometimes we can get a little hyperbolic on the show, but that's the reality of the world we live in. We get excited, right? Duke, Brodito's title reign, I think was perfect. You're not often going to hear us say that about titles.
Well, I think the last one we might have said, the only one that came close, if they hadn't had those two fucking weird-ass fucking matches that they did, Orange Cassidy was about as perfect as you can get.
Yep, Orange Cassidy was damn near fucking...
fumbled it.
That was the best title reign since this one, since we've had our show for 4 years, our AEW podcast. Brodito's title reign, 90 days. Duke, this was as flawless of a title reign as I could have ever imagined for a tag team. Look, we've spent the past 2024. We talked a lot about how this is AEW's strongest year in terms of singles wrestling. But yet it feels like we're forgetting the tag teams behind sometimes. Boy, did he fix that in 2025, and this reign perfected it. So, let's get into this reign. They win at Forbidden Door, defeating the Hurt Syndicate and FTR in the three-way match. Shock the world, and that they did. Defended it the following week against the Death Riders, Claudio and Wheeler. Good match. Oh, what are we going to do? We're going to take that title to CMLL. Defend it against Defunto and Zandikon Jr. We're then, a week later, All Out. Ladder match. Jet Speed, Hechicero and Alexander, and the Young Bucks. And an absolute fucking classic. We're not done. That same week? Yeah, we're getting Gates of Agony's best match they've ever had on AEW TV. Yeah, by the way, we're not done. Couple weeks later, we're going to have a classic at WrestleDream with Okada and Takeshita. And then we're going to lose the belts here. All the while having matches on Collision against the Don Callis family. Having that 6-year anniversary match against Josh Alexander and the Young Bucks with Kenny Omega as their tag partner. Every step of the way, Duke. Title defenses, non-title defenses. For 90 days. where these guys brought these titles from being on the Hurt Syndicate, which started out very strong but fizzled out, which is fine. That happens in tag team titles. That happens in wrestling in general. I feel very confident in saying this is the best title run since we've covered, since we've had our show, and this is the best tag title run in the history of this company. I am putting it over Adam Page and Kenny Omega. Is it shorter? Yes. I don't care, man. That, to me, you have to factor all of that in. In 90 days, what these guys did and how it was booked and who they got over and how they got themselves over, I'm putting everything into that. Adam Page and Kenny Omega versus the Young Bucks, they had the best match. This is my favorite tag title reign in AEW's history. And I cannot believe I'm saying that about Brodito in a put together team that could have just been just like when they put together Big Bill and Ricky Starks, just like when they put together Keith Lee and Swerve and Our Glory, just like when they put together, you know, you name it, right? We've seen these impromptu singles wrestlers tag titles. Doesn't always work. Sometimes it succeeds. Duke, where are you at with this? I mean, I know, might be saying some big things here, but I just got to know how you're feeling, because I feel like you've been there every step of the way with me. And like you were just saying, with Brodito as perhaps your favorite tag of the year. And we're both in line with Bandito as wrestler of the year. 100%. So I think he solidified it with another great match on pay-per-view. I can't wait to see what he does at Full Gear. Where are you at with this?
I think people maybe question a 90-day title reign being enough for a tag team to win tag team of the year. Look at my fucking tag team of the year for last year if you have any questions about that. But for those that don't know, I picked the Outrunners. Because last year's tag team leader was so bad that, I won't say bad, just so not worth giving an award to, that you could have given it to anybody you wanted to. Like, but that was my take on that, on last year's tag team award. So if you're curious about that, go listen to that video if you're curious. But I like I said, I think they're the best tag team of the year. So I'm going to say this is AEW's best tag team title reign that we've had, at least since we've been covering it at the very minimum.
Yeah, I think arguably it's the only one that's truly in contention with Hangman and Kenny. I think truly it's the only one that can contend with that title reign in terms of beginning to end.
I just think
that
title reign was at such a different time in AEW. I think if you took that title reign and did it right now with the current people we have, it's 10 times the title reign it ever was.
It could be fucking insane. So, well, in terms of just flawless booking,
I think that thing gets hurt retroactively a lot because of that, to be honest with you. Like,
but
that's
the one I was, because, you know, we can put it like FTR's first title reign was kind of, it was
even in 90 days that time. I don't know how long Kenny and him had the titles for. I bet it was longer than 90 days, though. And in 90 days, they could have done more with it now than just because of the roster. I mean, it's hard to compare.
Their title reign was 228 days.
And in 228 days, I would be shocked if they did as much what they did in 90 days. I would be mind blown.
Yeah. So, but I think that's usually the one that is the gold standard. And I have agreed in the past that that would be the one, like, I'd be like, yeah, it was pretty goddamn flawless. I don't know, man. To me, and I'll be saying this, I hope something comes along within the next couple of years and I can say beat it. This is the one I'm going to reference now when I say it's proof you can have a 3-month title reign. Length does not matter with these fucking title reigns to a certain extent. And with Brodito carrying us through the end of summer to the beginning of winter like they did. I don't care, man. I am so unbelievably excited that we just had this title reign. I what a fucking awesome experience of this team to go on. That, let's be honest, man, when we heard the name Brodito, it was kind of a fucking joke. No one took it serious. And then where they went with it, man, very special. Very fucking special. So, anything else you want to add, or I'll keep the show up chucking along?
Nah. I couldn't think of anything.
Casino gauntlet match for the inaugural AEW national title. Real quick, I'm going to list the entrants.
Sure.
Bobby Lashley.
It shouldn't be too hard. You can just read off the pre-announced graphic.
This is true. Lashley, Benjamin, Ricochet, Claudio, Garcia, Orange Cassidy, Wheeler Yuta, Kevin Knight, Roderick Strong, Mark Davis, Speedball, Daddy Magic, Matt Menard. Ricochet wins the match. Let's talk about Ricochet being a champion. I love it. I love Ricochet winning gold in AEW.
100%.
Now, on the other hand, this is a new title, the AEW National Championship. This is, we said, when they announced this title, we're like, all right, let's wait and see who they book as the first champion, Duke. We love Ricochet. One of my favorite wrestlers ever. Truly my favorite independent wrestler ever when he was on the indies. And I stand by that. He always has been. So, of course, I'm very happy Ricochet got rewarded here. Now, what I'm about to say is nothing against Ricochet. It has to do with this title. We said we are going to judge this title on who they book first. Is this just going to be another TNT championship? Is this just going to be another All-Atlantic, another International, another Continental, which actually was different for a little bit there. A little bit when they gave it different fucking rules in the matches. For a fucking 5 minutes, it was different. We have five fucking singles titles now. Five. Unified, International, Continental, TNT, and now the National Championship. And if you don't believe me, all those titles are all still active. They are still active in AEW's record books right now. We have five singles titles and one world championship. Six total. Now, is that me, you know, playing a little facetious? Sure. But go with me here. Either way, was this title going to be different? And you booked someone that is on AEW television every single fucking week. So now, Duke, let me ask you this. When we factor in those Ring of Honor titles, when we factor in this and that, and the biggest thing we have to mention is there's only 4 hours of AEW TNT every AEW television every single week. At what point did we not just get away from having four singles titles? Was that not the whole point of combining two of them, right?
No, in fact, that was not the point of combining two of them.
So what was purely
a fucking move to make Okada more over, which they thought they needed to do for some reason.
Because like, for some reason, there's this idea that we have the world championship, well, we need something under it. That's not how this works,
that
man.
That should be the Continental Championship.
Yes, how that works is...
There isn't some
second tier of a world championship. You have the world championship and then every other title that fucking isn't. You can't just magically say the unified title, well, it's bigger than the other ones, guys. Trust me. That's not how it works, man. It's not how wrestling works. It's not a separate division. It's the world championship or it's not. It's that fucking simple. Unless you add other stipulations to it like they did with the Continental, which was the only reason I gave that title a pass.
Which, and with the whole unified championship thing and the idea that the C2 is still going to take place this year, it implies that the C2 is going to technically break that up if somebody else wins it. Because yeah, if it's just a unified championship and it's not an actual separate championship with its own division, right, then it's no one's vying for the unified championship. They're vying for one of the two championships, and maybe he just puts them both on the line most of the time. But in the Continental Classic, the International Championship shouldn't be on the line. I'm just going to say it. Because it's not the International Classic. If it's called the Unified Classic, I'm going to be pissed because why are we punting the name?
We have no idea what they're going to do with that. Because AEW's current record book, it shows Okada as Unified, Okada as Continental, and Okada as International as three separate titles. I have no idea what they're going to do with that. So, yeah, I know. Here's what I'll say. I'll acknowledge. I care way too much about this little shit like this. I am a stats nerd. I am a record book fiend. I still get
Apologize for that. You know who
else? No, but I just want to put it out
there. Tony Khan.
I still think about New Japan erasing their history, and I get a fucking itch on the back of my neck. All right? Like, this is the kind of shit I think about. It's why I love wrestling. I love stats. I love all of that. And when you make this big declaration that we're going to do something different with this title, I'm not gonna, his quote was along the lines of, we're going to go back to those days, and it's going to be brought into other yada, yada, yada. It's going to be a different, it's going to be. When you do this and you put someone in the, as your first fucking champion, as someone we see every week on Dynamite, how, Duke, is it any different than the TNT title? Or just another singles title?
So, can I also make another point that's kind of separate, but also makes, it is like correlative to what we're talking about? I think that it's kind of silly because you've now put yourself in an even worse position where it's like, are you going to not have the championship be the national championship and go to other countries and do the thing? Or B, are you going to have him then be on TV, or sorry, not be on TV, which, let's be honest, Ricochet is a pretty good part of AEW TV at this point. So, like,
yeah,
And we notice whenever guys as good as him aren't there anymore, when Kenny's gone, when Ospreay's gone, when Swerve is gone, we notice. We can just tell there's a different air when they're around, you know?
Yeah.
Is it going to feel like that if he goes away? And to add a further point onto this, is that unique in AEW, a championship being defended in other countries?
I don't know, because CMLL just defended their title in wherever the fuck this pay-per-view was.
Didn't we just talk about how Brodito did the same thing with the AEW Tag Team Championships?
They have a CMLL title defense.
Hasn't Okada also done championship matches in Mexico? Am I tweaking? Like,
so is it just... Is it
maybe that last one wasn't true, but like certainly some most of the champions at some point have had a max in, on one of the Mexico
shows. Is the idea
shows.
Here that he just wants to make his international title again? Because...
We have the international title. That was the title's original gimmick. So does that mean that the unified title is permanently unified then and you can never get the international title now if you ever wanted it unless you beat Okada for both? Because if that's the case, then why'd you unify that one? You could have just invented a new championship to do that with.
You could have just fucking merged them. That's
that
the
too,
thing that I always
right?
get stuck on.
If you merge
on.
Them, then it's still the international title. Them. And then you could just make a new title that's the international title again, essentially. You know what I mean? Like,
because, again, for those of you that don't know, if you look at AEW's record
books... So is
that books,
what he's doing? If that's what he's doing, then this is just bullshit.
Yeah. If you guys look at AEW's record books, they did not merge those titles. Okada has held those titles. He has held the Continental title for 614 days. That was... This is not, like, something new that he did. So... It's very strange. I don't know, man. I'm so torn because I thought
if I beat Okada in a non-title singles match in Mexico, does that mean I get an international title shot? Or like, how does this work? Like,
I know, right? Well, since he's won it as unified, he's only
like,
defended
does it
work as unified.
A protector? Is it like a shield for the other championship now?
I know,
like...
right? But so he's only defended as unified since he's won it, right? But he has defended it on TV twice, so. We thought maybe it's a stipulation where he only defends it at pay-per-views. That was not the case. Ricochet, are we just going to see him defending this on random collisions like the TNT title, like the international title? Is that what this is going to be?
We have the TNT championship, but we use it more like it's a fucking championship on a pay-per-view type title. So, like, my thought would be you move that into the TNT's current spot. Even if you don't like this title that much, at least it'll be on pay-per-views. It can be defended on TV as well, but we should get the TV titles back to being TV titles. I'm all for Mercedes Moné as champion being on every pay-per-view, but no offense to Mark Briscoe, I don't know that I need him on every pay-per-view defending that thing. You know,
well, this is like, where we get to now is if these are all TV titles, there is zero excuse that either on Dynamite or Collision, once a week, one of these four titles should be defended.
Yeah, why has that not been happening, by the way? I don't understand why we have three TV titles.
Because we
basically
have Mercedes holding a title, which she is a...
Because, like, I don't care.
The
it's
ultimate
three championships,
draw.
But Okada's Continental is a TV title. Because the Continental Classic is a TV thing, you know what I mean? So,
I mean,
like,
I bet if we look, they've been doing it a lot recently. They've been doing that. But with four, I don't know, now we just have to wait and see. So, again, I'm happy Ricochet won a title. I am just... butthurt about doing this again with another title because I think it was
hey, we're gonna find out a lot about this really soon because the Continental Classic has already been announced, so you know, like
so I mean
I don't even know who's fucking in it, but it's been announced.
This just feels like we have buyer's remorse with this, with the international title, and we regret getting rid of it because it actually was a very unbelievably fucking awesome title that had great fucking reigns. Like Pac, like Orange Cassidy, like Roderick Strong, like Will Ospreay, like Takeshita, fucking Omega got one in there. and we just kind of put it to the side, and it is what it is. So again, we had to talk about that because we spent a lot of time giving reasons why we thought perhaps maybe we'll do something different with this. And Duke, I think he acknowledged very instantly right away when all 12 people in the match were not people that every single one of them we see every week. So clearly this was not one of those scenarios where, you know, maybe Ricochet surprises us and he's defending the title in Austria next week, right? Maybe he surprises us and he's defending this thing in Mexico.
If you were going to put it on somebody that's on every week, you would have to put it on somebody like Ricochet, because then you could take somebody like Ricochet to any company in the world and they'll have him wrestle one of their best wrestlers. And if you put a championship from another company on the line too, that's a lot of people. But like, my concern is we tried to do this with Pac. We tried to do this with Orange Cassidy at first, and they kind of let it go because I think it was probably difficult to get these matches set up on short notice, you know, like, so.
Yeah. Well, then again, I mean, you can sanction your title thoroughly in any scenario, right? It's just,
maybe that's why he doesn't end up on an international person, because nobody was willing to play ball. It's possible, you know, like,
it's possible. Here's what I'll say though. Now, so now we know the winner, acknowledging who won it, right? What do I think about Ricochet being the one that win it? I think this was a very smart move to not put it on someone that's held the TNT, the international, or the continental title before, or the world title, although I don't think there was any world title contenders in here. I think that was a very smart move, because I think if you put this on Orange Cassidy, at that point, there is no difference, right? If you put this on Roderick Strong, there is no fucking difference. You put it on Ricochet, it's his first title in the company. So we'll see what happens. Visually, what'd you think of the title?
That looks fine.
Looks fine. I agree. All right. Let's get into this next match. Match itself, it was solid, right? Moxley versus Kyle, it was fine. We kind of knew what was going to happen here. Although we didn't. Kyle O'Reilly stabs him multiple times, and he makes John Moxley tap out. We've been asking, Duke, when will the seeds begin? Holy shit, it's here. Marina Shafir looked like she had to put the old dead dog down. She crushed this, okay? She wasn't in the match, but she had the arguably the most important moment in showing that it's time. The seeds are here for Jon Moxley. As the kids say, your time is up. Kyle O'Reilly.
My time is now.
Massive pay-per-view win over the ace of AEW. Kyle O'Reilly and the Continental Classic has to write itself, right?
God, I hope so.
I hope so, too. So, I mean, what'd you think of Marina finally giving the look? We got a whole fuckload of shenanigans.
We have said for months that that's going to be your signal for when this all falls apart.
It was going to be Marina.
Yes.
Oh, I feel so, I'm so happy that it was.
Yes.
She was going to be the first one to let us know.
100%. We've got a little bit of seed planted here over the last few weeks, but that's the fucking kicker. The next thing that's going to happen, Daniel Garcia is going to be the next one, and it's going to happen this week in Dynamite or Collision, I suspect.
Which, when we get to this post-match angle here, Death Riders come out.
But once Danny's out, he's done. You know what I mean? After that, he's gone, like, 100%.
So the Death Riders came out, they ran off these other guys, and when they were going to leave, Claudio had a look, and he caught Daniel Garcia in the eyes. And Claudio kind of gave him the, A-OK, you can go join him. I'll be the first to tell you. I thought the next leader would be Wheeler Yuta. It's definitely Claudio or Pac now. And that's fine, because I think you could still set up the Wheeler thing down the line if you really wanted to. Or again, maybe Tony.
There's part of me that's like, if the multi-year plan for Wheeler was not for him to become something more, it sucks for him. You know,
as of
like,
right now, if maybe he just doesn't see him as that guy anymore, which is fine. Acknowledge it and move on, right?
100%.
And if he, Wheeler's clearly not being paged up to be this leader, because Wheeler worked for Pac, right?
No, that's what earlier I'm saying. It makes me incredibly sad if it's not him, you know, because
it makes me sad too. But that look that Claudio gave Danny, there you go. This could be what Claudio needs to be a world champion, by the way. If he becomes the leader of this group, look out. signal number two was that. Claudio giving Daniel the...
not to be like a Europeanist, but what if that's what they come out later and say it wasn't actually Mox that brought in Pac, but it was him because they fucking grew up on the circuit together. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely could.
Or he helped to train him because he was wrestling in Germany at the same time. You know what I mean? Like when Pac was on the way up or something like that in Britain. You know what I mean? Like, I know Claudio is obviously Swiss, but like he was wrestling in all those, you know, European promotions.
It's European. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So very, very happy for Kyle O'Reilly here to get a big win over John. And John Moxley's playing this character perfect. And now, Duke, we can finally say...
Okay, now here's my question. Do we get a crash-out promo from him when it all falls apart? Is that what happens? Like, Mox.
John?
Do we get him, like, freaking out? Or does he accept it and, like, this is what he wanted the whole time? Like...
I don't know. I don't know what route he's going to take. It's been so long.
Is John Moxley still a heel if he gets betrayed by the Death Riders?
No. No, he goes away for a while.
Okay.
He gets that vacation he's been wanting. He's going to take a little time off, right? And then he's going to come back to a fucking massive baby face. They did like a little backstage promo. And everyone around him kind of looked deflated. That was hint number three. I don't remember if that was on the show or if that was like something they posted on YouTube. So... You know, they do the little backstage promos and everyone starts playing in their characters a little bit. It was one of those. So, yeah, guys. Been saying for a while, it's going to happen. It can't happen for this. Can't run forever. Look, it still might be 2 months, but the seeds are there.
I think a better way to put it is it's not so much that it can't run forever. It might actually be able to. It might be one of those factions you could keep going back to the well on because of the history with the Blackpool Combat Club and all of them being major stars, including even Wheeler at this point. So, like, I think you could keep it going, but there is this thing in wrestling where if some point when something's been going for this long and it's got this much, I mean, think about all the fucking hype around the Death Riders at this point. If they get taken out and it becomes something new, that adds instantly so much flavor and fire to that new group you're creating, just like it did with the original Death Riders. You have to do that at some point. Otherwise, it all goes into nothing eventually, you know? Like, eventually it just loses steam and it stops being interesting. If you can get ahead of that and find a way to reinvent this faction every couple of years or every year and a half or so, you know, to make it keep its spark that it has, I mean, that might be it might be something that they're onto with this. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Look, I'll be the first to tell you. I didn't see Claudio leading this group. I thought when the time came, Mox was going to be put down first, and then Claudio, and you'd see the new group emerge, maybe adding one more member, but Marina kind of being your, you know, your side-by-side with Wheeler as he ascends and becomes the ultimate evil. You were supposed to destroy this and not join them. You know, and he just, if Claudio gets this shot, I think this acknowledges, it could be Pac too. Let's throw that out there. We don't know yet. It could be Pac too. Either one of these guys, this instantly, is this fair to say, Duke? Puts them in the main events picture, probably within a pay-per-view cycle, maybe two?
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And it'd be really difficult with this, even Claudio or Pac, whichever one's leading the group. It would be very difficult if Swerve is not the champion to not make that the new world champion. You know, it's going to be a hard sell to not have them win if they are that high, you know?
So there's a scenario where we see the new blood Death Riders do some fucking crazy work.
Death Riders could end up being championship holders of the world title for like 2.5 out of 3 years or something. You
it
know,
could
like,
be. You guys know us, though. We like to spend some time on the potential future of the Death Riders. That's one of our favorite things to do because, look, we love the Combat Club and everything it did. It's the funnest thing. It's so fun to fantasy book it. So we had to spend some time on that.
It's got so many limitless possibilities because it's so.
It really does.
It's got so many options. I mean, the people you put in it, it's kind of like the Don Callis family. When you put so many good options in a group, inevitably everything that group does is going to be insane, you know? So, like.
Let's get into Mark Briscoe versus Kyle Fletcher, numero 6. So we mentioned how.
Six times the charm.
Six times the charm. Their collision match. So they had a couple matches that we really liked. Dynasty from this year, really good.
Yeah.
Collision from the end of last year at Winter is Coming. Mm-hmm. Collision match of the year.
100%.
We weren't that high on Briscoe versus Fletcher 5.
No.
We get to this one. Again, fully willing to admit, wasn't that excited for it. And the match, so it was no DQ match.
They tried everything, too. They made it no
DQ. They
tried
everything. They took their happy little time through this match.
The Don Callis family joining thing on top of it, too. Like, they tried, yep. And it just it never got there.
And they, I'll tell you what they did. They made Mark Briscoe earn this, and he fucking earned it. He hit an Avalanche Razor's Edge through a barbed wire table, then hit the J Driller, and he won the world. He won the title in AEW. The crowd went absolutely ballistic for him. And good for Mark Briscoe for finally winning a title in AEW.
Yeah.
He definitely deserved it.
Sure.
After being in the C2 for 2 years, being the Ring of Honor world champion, constantly always being in that spot, you know, he earned this title opportunity. Sixth time was the charm. We both predicted him to win because it felt like, why would you do it again?
There's a right. certain thing in wrestling where you give somebody 5 title shots, fucking some point they're going to win it, you know, like.
Yeah, basically. So, the match, I've seen a lot of people geeking out a little bit about this match, about how much they loved it. I didn't love it like that. I didn't dislike it. I think the match nearly killed our boy, Dart. I think this match actually did kill him, funny enough. Take that for what you will. I won't expand upon that further. But I will say this. Like Sam Wilson, Captain America, they made him earn that shield. Mark Briscoe earned this TNT title. Before we get into Kyle Fletcher's reign, Duke, what'd you think of this? I mean, some people online are thinking this is one of their favorite matches of the year. I've seen other people saying it was a little not their cup of tea, but Where are you at with Kyle Fletcher, Mark Briscoe 6 after we've had this deep history of these two guys already?
I thought it was fine. I think I understand where people are coming from because it's Kyle. So, you know, I think we just expect Kyle to be like a fucking astronaut, and he was like a fucking, you know, 747
they brought the viciousness and they brought
one.
The big
it was a 747 pilot or whatever the big ass plane that flies super high is, you know what I mean? He was that. Yeah. Just wasn't an astronaut, you know what I mean? Because Mark Briscoe is at best a 747 pilot, you know what I mean? Like, and that's not me taking a shot at Mark Briscoe, by the way. That is still high praise. That puts you above a lot of wrestlers at AEW. A lot of them are fucking flying helicopters, you know, like barely holding on to the controls, you know, like. So
I'm personally still taking Dynasty and Collision over this one.
I think I would agree. I think
I'll tell you what, they did beat last pay-per-view.
Sure. The last pay-per-view match they had was not very good by comparison.
But still, I'm just, hey, I'm putting it out there.
I don't know, man. Mark Briscoe did deserve to win this title.
That motherfucker had to earn it. God damn, did they? He went
you know
through
what?
Some pain.
I'll say this. If Kyle goes on to win the C2, I'm not going to look that badly back on this, to be honest with you.
No.
Like,
there was a tease in this match of Kyle going for the brainbuster onto that fucking screwdriver that he had set up on the fucking turnbuckle.
Yeah, please never tease that again. I was terrified for a
the
second.
The thought of that sent chills down my spine. So,
yeah, Kyle.
Kudos to that, man.
What an animal.
I mean, seriously, that was awesome. So
that's why this guy gets sky blue, bro, because he's fucking insane.
But Kyle Fletcher, I mean, the fucking man you are, man. I mean, seriously, you are the fucking guy. And I think
if there was ever one wrestler I'd want to interview right now, a young wrestler from AEW, he would be the one. Like, I would want to know what he thinks of all this that has happened to him in the last couple of years. Like, because, right. I mean, he went from being like an undersized.
From Australia. Kyle Fletcher,
like,
say my
not,
full
not to disrespect
name.
The guy, but he went from kind of like a scrawny built, sort of high flying, sort of Australian weirdo to like he's like him in fucking AEW now. You know, like
he could be the next man.
He might win the world title at the beginning of this next year. That could
very well
happen.
Could. Well, talk about his title reign, huh? We're
I'm
very excited for one of our pillars, Kyle fucking Fletcher. To win the TNT title. 114-day title reign. Good length. And I'll sum it up before I go through the matches. Really damn good title reign.
Mm-hmm.
Won it off of Dustin Rhodes at
I forgot Dustin Rhodes won the TNT title, bro.
On Collision 104. Kyle couldn't win it at All In, man. Come on. He won it at Collision 104 off Dustin Rhodes in the Chicago Street Fight. Perfectly fine match. He gets good matches with anyone. The next week, fucking slobberknocker with Tomohiro Ishii on Collision. 3 weeks later, Hiromu Takahashi, fun fucking match. That same week, defeats Commander. A couple weeks go by. My bad. The following week, defeats Orange Cassidy on Dynamite 6-year anniversary. The following week, defeats Kyle O'Reilly on Title Tuesday. 2 weeks later, the Mark Briscoe
Wrestle Dream. That was when he became Kyle 1. That was crazy.
That was when he became Kyle 1 and Kyle became Kyle 3. 3 weeks later, the only kind of stinker, the Mark Briscoe match at Wrestle Dream. Whatever. 2 weeks go by, the banger with Ace Austin. The next week, the good match with Scorpio Sky. And then he loses it a week later. This was, by all definitions, Duke, a true television championship. What'd you think of his title reign in general? 114. I mean, goddamn, if we didn't just have Brodito and I went on that big fucking spiel, let's say, how great that was.
If we didn't have Brodito, this might be the best title reign of the year. Like, you know? Yeah.
But it felt damn good to get our footing back because, you know, we had a couple little weird ones in there. Once Adam Copeland kind of got hurt, we stumbled a little bit. We caught our feet back with Danny. Adam Cole gets hurt. Wasn't the greatest title reign to begin with. And then Dustin Rhodes, whatever the hell he did for 3 weeks. Then we kind of got our foot back with Kyle. Perfect time to end it. And also in this championship reign, he faced Hangman Adam Page on pay-per-view for the world title.
Yep.
Yeah. So
really fucking good title reign, man.
It was. Following contest, Kenny Omega and Jurassic Express versus Josh Alexander and the Young Bucks. The ultimate PWG style party match. Great fucking time. Everyone looked awesome. Young Bucks win. Matt pinned. Who did he pin? Jack Perry. He pinned Jack Perry. Post-match, Callis came to the ring. Mark Davis, Etchicero, Clone, and Rocky Romero. Bags of money. Start beating up Omega as the Bucks are walking away. They toss the money down. Super kicks everyone. Jurassic Express starts dealing some blows. Kenny Omega the Bucks, high five. And then he just embraces them, hugs them, stand tall. What a great feeling. The Elite are back. The elite. Bring it back. So, yeah, fun PWG match. Duke, what'd you think of this ending here with them finally reuniting? Sometimes when wrestling's obvious, sometimes it's at its best, right? This is one of those perfect examples, right?
I think it's ended up being my favorite moment of the year, to be honest with you. Because what I had penciled in before this, I don't think it can be that anymore, given what happened, to be honest with you.
That's fair.
I'll just tell everybody what I had in before. I had Hangman winning the title reign because I was so invested in that title win. I don't think I can put that anymore, to be honest with you, given what's happened. So we'll get into that more later. But, you know, this was, I think, a really fun match. I'll just say that. I mean, it was everything you would think. The Bucks did indeed buck. But I actually was, that's the least surprising part. Obviously, it's like some of the best wrestlers in the world, you know? And it's like, yeah, okay, they did fucking insane shit out there, of course. So shout out Yosh, by the way, for always looking
very good job, Josh Alexander.
Didn't
miss a match with AEW, the heart and soul of AEW, launching.
Yes.
And you killed it, man.
Three-fourths of the guys are the reason why it's here. You know, like...
Hey, guess what? Josh Alexander beat Kenny Omega on pay-per-view.
That did happen.
So...
That's got to be pretty big for
his. Can't take that away from him.
That is true. He did do it. I was a little surprised by the result. But given what's about to happen, makes so much sense. You know what I mean? So, I love the reunion. It makes so much sense. I don't know where they're going from here. If they're going to be in trios, are they going to be a tag team in a singles? Are they even going to be friends, really? Like, you know, or are they just going to be like not enemies? How is this going to work?
Perry back in the Elite?
What's Okada going to do? You know, like,
what's Okada? What's Nakazawa? We know Kota Ibushi's out for a while.
There's lots of options. Could we get a dinosaur?
Are we going to go full-blown Elite Reunion and actually do this thing one last time?
They get Hangman back in and they just say, we run it.
Because I got to tell you guys, 2026 is going to be a little bit of an emotional year for AEW.
Hangman is in a bit of a tough spot right now.
Probably needs some love too. So
100%. We'll get there.
2026 in AEW is going to be, I know a lot of people aren't talking about this yet, but
it's setting up for a big year. Oh yeah.
We're getting towards that point of a lot of AEW is going to start looking different probably by 2027.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah.
Contracts will be ending. People will be moving on.
Guys are not going to be wrestling full time anymore. Those contracts are up. You're going to see them step back a little more. I think this might be our true one. And I mean this. I could be wrong. They could reunite in 2028 for all I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a genuine, true Elite Reunion. And we're going to do this damn thing to the full extent one more time. Because I mean, we've already seen Kenny
with the current
landscape.
It makes so much sense too, as well. We always talk about all the time with the current tag teams that we have. What if we had the Young Bucks and Kenny, right? Be able to run some of these trios matches right now, you know?
And you have
what
to fill that gap with Hangman Adam Page as well.
100%. So what I think, 100%.
When the Civil War happens, what if Okada joins them? Like you said, well, Jack has kind of become part of the Elite. Luchasaurus,
Oh, imagine he gets to be a member of the Elite. That would be so fucking cool for his career.
For him.
If that, I hope that happens, to be honest with you, for him. Like,
if you guys don't know his story, man, and just how he kind of got into wrestling, and I mean, he got cut from wrestling from NXT, went on to fucking Big Brother, kind of got his stuff back together with wrestling. He goes to Mexico, gets this gimmick with the dinosaur. The rest is history, man. And it's just, he's so cool. One of my favorite Big Brother players ever. The fact that those worlds collided, I still can't believe it. And then has what happened to him with,
oh, please let them in. The dinosaur on BTE would be fucking comedy, dude.
Yeah. Like, he's done his little fucking, you know, oh man, when he used to have those little segments on BTE in like 2019, when they would cut to him and he's reading like medieval literature, it's one of my, because he has a medieval literature degree. Like, the guy knows his shit, man. He's fucking awesome. All right. Anyways, let's get on to our, they actually somehow didn't call it a double main event. Kudos to them, because, you know, the main event goes on last, right? Chris Statlander versus TBS champion Mercedes Moné. So, this match got started and you kind of got a vibe of, oh shit, we might go like 8 minutes. Like, they started off sprinting. And then they start selling everything so long. One of my favorite things that happened that played into the selling, though, was the 14 Amigos. Awesome stuff. While I liked this match, this was not their World's End match last year. Sorry. And Duke, I can't help but feel like they're padding some time on this match. Because it got to a point where they were overselling everything like they'd been in a 40-minute match. And I wonder if getting the sprint, like the fucking 2-3 minute sprint that they did out of the way quick, was to set this up to make it feel like you've been going for that long. That might have been a decision that they made.
But I mean, if you think about it, if they went full burst for the first 5-10 minutes of the match, you'd be pretty gassed, you know, like.
Yeah, and it was just so strange. Like, they just took back everything and turned it down 8 fucking notches and went so, took their, one move, sell for fucking 50 seconds. All right, I'm going to hit a fucking, I don't know, I'm going to put you in the statement maker for 90 seconds. And it just kind of felt like one of those things of, they were just adding time to add time. And I don't know. It was very strange. I've actually never really had that vibe for a match in AEW before.
I think this is actually a really good point to emphasize that I think this match was actually fine. I think this is the point in the show where the combination of weird shit that happened throughout this show that we really weren't expecting and didn't think was a really good idea, I think kind of started to add up for us at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't think this match actually had anything really wrong with it. I think we were just kind of like really thinking a little.
We were
already thinking
gear.
Ahead to the main event and thinking, yeah. Oh my God, imagine if this show ends in a weird ass way, you know, like.
But I feel very confident saying their two pay-per-view matches last year were better than this. I am very, very confident in that. Their World's End match kicked this match's fucking ass.
Yeah, I wonder why this got put in the spot that it did. Not on the card necessarily, but like in terms of how
it was booked. And I would argue
this
was the result I cared the most about.
Yes, right. That's what I'm saying. I don't understand how this got shelved when it's the most... It was arguably probably the one that was selling the pay-per-view the most, right?
Yeah, but it's one of those things, if we're just looking at stats, this was a 23-minute match, right? And if I just was looking at stats and I saw that, I'd be like, oh, shit. So Mercedes in a 20-minute match, we know how that usually goes. That's going to be unbelievable. Yet, I don't know what happened in this. Again, maybe I can watch it in a vacuum at another date and see what happens, right? But Statlander wins. And Toni Storm and Statlander have now defeated Mercedes Moné. She will not win the AEW Women's World Championship. As she's holding this TBS title, I think is what we can take from this. And Statlander gets another decisive, massive victory.
Another better way to put it, or she's not going to take it off of somebody who's in the middle of a title reign that is going to be able to do something. She's going to only be able to win this in a spot where they don't have somebody to win the championship is what I think this means. Like,
yep. And like you said, keep an eye out for the Statlander title reign. It might surprise us all. Mina, Toni, and now Mercedes all... solid matches to bangers. A couple of them have been pretty damn good. So, again, yeah, I don't want to make it seem like I thought this was a bad match. But holy shit. I think you probably, there's multiple times you could have, like, cut out 30 seconds. So, I don't know. Any of the thoughts on this? Any thoughts on Stat winning?
I think it was the right decision to have Stat retain here. And I think... it's just kind of confirms to me the kind of the way I've been thinking about Mercedes for a little while now, which is that this world title is a match that she's going to have two or three times a year, but she's probably not going to win it, like I said, until it gets into a position where we've had a champion for a while and we don't really know where we're going with it because there's not any really emerging major stars right now that we want to throw it on. At least we haven't booked anybody to be that. I also think that when you throw Mercedes on this title, you're going to have a generational title reign with it. You're not just going to have her win it and then not defend it every week. I think she's going to be defending the thing all the goddamn time everywhere, and she's going to be making the best women's title reign we've ever seen. Which, who knows, that might be a really hard bar to try and clear after Stack gets through it. So, you know, like, it's like, I think it's a situational thing, and I think it's not necessarily... that she can't win any of these matches. I think it's that it's less likely for the time being until either she loses the TBS championship or she is got both, but there's not anybody else, you know, like if somebody gets hurt or something like that, and there's not an immediate, you know, choice. And that's not to say that Mercedes isn't commanding of the championship. I think it's because she's so commanding of it that you want to give her a title reign that's actually worth something. That's not just, all right, we're throwing it on her so she has a 15th, 14th, whatever it is, championship, you know, like. So it needs to be the most meaningful championship she's ever won in her career. That's what it needs to be. It can't just be the 15th or 14th. It has to mean
exactly.
Something.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, this was the right call. And it was a fucking awesome decision here. So. Lexi backstage with Don Callis, Okada, and Takeshita and Hechicero, and they announced that the first three entrants into the Continental Classic is Okada, Takeshita, and Al Fletcher. I'd love
Doesn't
to do
that make the AEW Women's Championship seem like a really difficult to attain world championship when she's
Goddamn
won
right
every championship under the sun, but she can't win that one?
It absolutely does. Yes.
So, I mean, you could do this 10 fucking times before she wins it, and all it does is just make the championship look fucking incredible, you know?
Yep. So we got our first announcements of the C2, which starts next week. If we had the brackets out, right, I'd love to do something before Wednesday where we could actually do like a prediction show for
I'm
the
C2. I'm super down.
If they don't give it to us, guys, I mean, there's nothing we can do. They might announce it on Wednesday who's in it. But if they get it out to us on Monday we'd love to get a show to you on Tuesday and really talk about it. So keep an eye out for that if they do, because obviously Continental Classic's kind of like our...
We could probably work something Tuesday night if it came out while I was at work on Tuesday.
Yeah, as long as it comes out before Wednesday, I'd love to do something with
100%,
it.
100%, yeah.
I think it's fair to say, Duke,
we can do something Wednesday morning.
This is kind of our favorite tournament. It's almost like our favorite section of the AEW calendar year.
This is definitely the best part of the year, yeah, because there's all those pay-per-views and that's this, but this is when the best wrestling on AEW TV happens on a weekly basis every year, right here. Yeah. So, you know.
Agreed. So, yeah. Keep an eye out for that if we do. I'd love to do some talk about that.
Are you some good entrants in Kyle and Takeshi? Oh, yeah. So, you know, like.
I mean, hey, we talked about it. It could be the Don Callis Continental Classic. It'd be great. So.
100%.
Fuck, we're two, a quarter two, of the way there.
Yep, two people in already. So lock it in. Throw Josh in. Oh, God. Throw Josh in. God. Please.
Hell yeah. Get to the world title match main event.
I didn't even think about what I was saying. And then I was like, wait, yes, do throw Josh in. Indeed.
Indeed, Squire. Hang Matt on a page for Samoa Joe in a steel cage for the AEW men's world title. Yeah. Samoa Joe bled all over the place. This was kind of exactly what we thought the main event would be, Duke. I think it's fair to say in terms of a match quality, wasn't bad, wasn't great. It existed, and they took the violence to the degree that we thought they would in the steel cage with these two.
So, and this is not a knock on the match hardly at all, because Hangman has had really good record in steel cage matches. This is not his best steel cage match, in my opinion.
That's fair. But Hangman's no longer world champion, dude. What did you think of this match?
Okay, so I've been like... both the most glazer of this theory, you know what, I'll say this, the theory of this title run, I was the most down for this of anybody. I mean, it was my like permanent status on Blue Sky for like 6 months or something like that before he even got the title shot. So like, I had been on this energy since Hangman was like in his fucking shit with Swerve, and that kept coming back, and we'll get to him, by the way, and fucking all that shit that was going on where he had to become a man again, basically, you know, and become an actual human again instead of being a diabolical monster like he'd been for a couple of years. And I was so down for wherever that was going. Fast forward to the actual title reign taking place. We open up the first couple of weeks. Hangman Adam Page sounds like a fucking idiot, Charlie. And he continues to sound like an idiot for the next couple months. At no point did Hangman sound like he was in control. Every point throughout this title reign, except maybe the Kyle match.
I was going to say, the only time he did, which we always give this outlier.
Is the Kyle match.
He told Kyle Fletcher, motherfucker, if you're facing me and you cheat,
you lose that title's your title, mine. Bitch. That's mine. It
so
be mine.
Fuck around and find out, brother.
I'll give him that. Other than
he,
that.
He laid the law down with Kyle Fletcher. And we really thought he was taking grasp of his title reign at All Out.
Maybe Hangman was on a fucking dry spell that week. I don't know. But, you know, maybe they were in a dry county. I don't know. But, you know, but that pay-per-view cycle aside, at every point, it has been people dictating to Hangman what they're going to do to get a title shot. Quite literally. And they have done their worst to try and backpedal and make it seem like Hangman's the one deciding all this stuff. But he was never the one deciding this stuff. And I know I'm being petty, but I don't give a shit. It is what it is. So now we fast forward to the first Samoa Joe match. And I remember us thinking, this doesn't make any sense. Why is he having a match with Joe? I mean, we like Joe, but why are we having this match? You know? So we roll that cycle. It's fine. We're like, okay, whatever. But then we start to get the vibe that we're running it back. And that's when me and you were just checked the fuck out. Because I wanted to give them the opportunity to like not let Hangman sound like a fucking absolute idiot. But let's look at this title reign. He starts off like an idiot, gets the Kyle match, whatever, goes back to being an idiot again, continues to have shit dictated to him. Samoa Joe basically demands a match, and then he demands a match back because Joe's still dogging him after he beats him the first time, and then loses the title in a stipulation he called for himself.
Yep.
Hangman's cooked, at least for now.
Hangman Adam Page was constantly bullied, manipulated, rage baited, and made to look like a fucking fool in this title reign.
A buffoon, Charlie.
In this title reign that, without a shadow of a doubt, defeated the quote-unquote greatest villain in AEW's history when he ascended to the light side and had this insane arc where they clearly
they
ended that title. They
yub-nubbed of the century for this yes. guy.
And in turn, what did they do? They played him out like a fucking fool. First of all, you had him rematch Jon Moxley three weeks later. Baffling decision. Okay, move on. MJF manipulates him, makes him look like a fool every step of the way, and Hangman falls right into it because apparently, all of a sudden, now that Hangman has a champion, he's not allowed to be the smartest wrestler in the fucking book, which he's always been. Okay, whatever. It's just a weird start, right? Kyle Fletcher thing, great. Great. Best match of his title run. And he really started to lay the line on that. So much so, the following week, he did the thing with Lee Moriarty, which we all loved. And then Samoa Joe? What was the line? This is the most shocked I've ever been in a ring. This is the most shocked I've ever been in the wrestling business.
Confused.
This is the most confused I've ever been in wrestling. Why did Samoa Joe get upset at me? Bro, when you're starting a feud with that, it was dead. But, you know, he beat Samoa Joe, which should have been at Title Tuesday. But again, we like Joe, but they extended it to WrestleDream for why? Whatever. What are they going to do? Run it back at AEW Backlash? Oh, he's going to lose it. At Backlash.
I want to be clear that I'm actually happy for Joe. Great for him.
I am happy for Joe. And while I sarcastically said after WrestleDream, if Samoa Joe goes for it again, I'm rooting for him.
I actually was as well at some point in this match. I turned on Hangman at one point in this match.
And here's the bottom line of this, Duke. And people can agree with this or they don't have to. I don't really. It is what it is. We now know that they know, being Tony Khan or who's ever involved in booking this, that this title reign did not go where they wanted it to. They pulled
this
the plug.
This is the proof. There's no this way this the was proof. The planned ending of the fucking
and if you,
ascension
if you
of
truly
Hangman
believe,
to the light side.
Yeah, if you truly believe that the plan for when Jon Moxley lost this title, the biggest villain in AEW's history as champion, he locked the thing into a fucking cage, man, was to drop it to a second Samoa Joe match? Oh, because of Hook? Again, I got no complaints with the Hook thing. We haven't even mentioned that. I have no problems with Hook because
it's
he's
the lead that's been buried this entire
thing. Yeah, if you guys
thing,
follow
he's
our show.
He's the lead that's been buried by the whole thing.
Yeah. If you follow our show, you know what the kind of thing is with Hook. They're going to constantly try to put Hook in certain spots to get him over because, well, fuck it. Why not? And so I have no complaints with putting Hook in a big spot. I want to see if he can rise to the occasion. And they gave him a world title match against Samoa Joe last year, and he rose to the occasion. So, again, I've got no qualms with Hook being the reason this happened. Whatever. It makes a lot more sense than him teaming up with fucking Eddie Kingston. Anyways. So Hangman Adam Page loses his title. And it is now confirmed to us, based on this booking, Tony Khan officially lost faith in this title reign. He said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to put this thing back on Joe. We're going to put it on the ops. I know I can rely on Joe. You know what the kicker of all this is, Duke?
What's that?
Swerve returns.
And you know, and I don't want to be that asshole. But I said this, or you said this, right immediately, and I was thinking the exact same thing. Why would you take the championship off of this guy's greatest rival and then bring him out?
Swerve has a stare down with Samoa Joe? Didn't we just do this?
Now, to be fair.
No, we just did this.
I'll give them this. He is who Swerve won the championship off of.
Yes.
So there is history there. But it's still bullshit.
If you were going to return Swerve and Hangman just wins in this fucking match, and we're still holding out hope that he just defeated the Ops, we're still holding out hope he can beat Mr. AEW, and then Swerve returns and fucking kills him right there? That is the best.
Imagine
angle
a heel
that
Swerve
in
next year too. That would be
year.
So great. Oh,
there's
my
no
God.
Bigger angle. I'm sorry. He returns with that theme song and eviscerates Hangman Adam Page after he just beat the Ops, surviving a hook heel turn. There is no fucking way that's not the best angle they could run all year. There is no fucking the fucking Titantron had the house burning announcing him. What was this for? So Hangman and Swerve can stand tall at the end like that? Get the fuck out of here, man. There's no way. They should, Duke.
They and should what am never... I supposed to take from this? That he's
no,
trying
here's
to
the thing.
No, because think about this. What does this usually signal? I mean, sometimes it's just some random ass person coming out, right? And that's probably yep. what it's going to be chalked up to
but
in this case.
But this is Swerve. This is the big three.
Yes.
Swerve,
and this is
Osprey,
two guys
Hangman.
That are inevitably linked. So, or inexplicably linked. My bad. I tried misspoke, but like inexplicably linked, right? So, inevitably, if one of them comes out, it is a statement toward the other, no matter what, whether it's positive or negative. And so, all I can take away from this is he's trying to cover for his buddy who just got beat.
If
by that
Swerve
I mean, he's trying to go in and get his guys. You know, like when your buddy loses, and you have to go beat the guy that beat him. You know, like
yep.
Is it that?
Swerve and Hangman cannot team together. I fully fundamentally believe with this rivalry and its place in AEW and its place in the history of AEW, they can't team, man.
Oh, no. Oh,
they
no, Charlie.
They cannot team. This
just,
cannot be a,
no,
oh,
no.
Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes.
Out what's gonna happen.
Can they coexist?
I just figured out how Samoa Joe's title reign is going to get extended. Swerve is going to get cost by fucking Hangman.
And I just, at this point, Hangman needs to step away, go to the Elite. Here's the thing, man. Your best moment was the promo in Mexico. And when he kicked Kyle Fletcher's ass. This title reign. And look, I'm going to be honest here too, before I get too lost in my train of thought. Hangman's going to win the world title like 6-7 times in this company, all right? They're not all going to be perfect, okay? We can acknowledge that. His second title reign doesn't have to be the... He can have a stinker, okay?
But we can
it's
all
not
pray
a big
that
deal.
They're not this bad.
Yeah, and you know what? Guess what? Every title reign he wins, is when he wins it, it's a big fucking deal. And him beating Moxley was a big fucking deal. You can't take that away from him. No matter what they did after, you can't take that away from him. That was a big fucking move. That was a big moment. But dude, if this doesn't signal Tony Khan has to lose a little faith in the guy, what the fuck more could you want? I can't believe you had the balls to do that at the end and for him to stand side by side with Hangman. That almost upset me more than anything.
Guy. He's going to do what he's told. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like,
no, but
from
you got to protect
perspective,
that, man.
It's hilarious,
you have
though,
to protect
you know?
That rivalry. You don't have that in any company. That's not you. Roman and Brock, right? All they do, they never fucking do anything. They only fight each other, right? Mm-hmm. And they return 18 times a year, and no one ends up fucking caring because the matches never get to that level.
No.
Hangman and Swerve is the only other modern rivalry that can get to that level of matches. I feel so protective of that rivalry.
It's
and
the
I
one
just
we
know
should
we're
going to
tune into Dynamite in 2 weeks, and they're going to be fucking tag teaming mm-hmm. against Shibata and goddamn fucking Joe or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to have to sit there and be like, damn, the rivalry's fucked. Because the company's been going for 6 years, dude. You know how hard it is to get a rivalry like that? They've done it one time.
They ran it for 2.5 years when they got it because they knew they weren't going to get another chance to run something like that. Because they have fumbled the other one. Think about it. The only other time we ever had that was CM Punk and MJF. And we thought that was going to be that for the next 3 years, you know? And obviously CM Punk ends up going his own separate way. It happens the way that it happens, brawl out, all that. And then that doesn't get to happen.
On Punk, Tony Khan did allude to the fact that he doesn't hate Punk.
No, I don't.
Again, he could be keeping face. That was part of that era Helwani thing.
Here's a fucking face turn for everybody. I don't hate CM Punk anymore.
Oh, there you go. See, I like that. I don't know if
I'm over it. It's fine. He's just a guy.
You know what? That's true. I'm over it too. To me, it's whatever. It's water under the bridge.
He wrestles for the other company. I might tune into a match every now and then because he's still one of my favorite wrestlers. I just don't care about the guy anymore. It is what it is, you know? Like,
but I don't know, man. Am I too protective of this rivalry?
No.
I don't think you could have had a bigger angle.
No, that's what I was emphasizing, the point of bringing up the Punk thing, because that was the only other one we had that even got even to a close lift that level, and it couldn't be able to get off the ground because MJF's got other, you know, his dance partner left. So, you know, like,
Young Bucks and Lucha Bros never hit the level that these guys did.
Not even close.
We're talking... No.
The match quality maybe did, but, like, the match quality doesn't mean the feud was
quality,
fucking great.
Sure. Absolutely.
The match quality doesn't dictate a great feud.
But what this rivalry did and the fucking level of hatred you actually believed in...
Yeah, I've never seen
anything in the amount of care that went into booking it...
You know what it, like, kind of vibes like to me is, like, you know those matches that, like, Rey Mysterio and, like, Randy Orton had back in the day? Like, it kind of reminds me of that level, you know, like... Where it's just, it transcends even the PG era of wrestling, you know, like, and yeah, because when wrestling is good, it's fucking good, you know, like.
Well, the good news we can take from this, though.
You don't fuck with that, but they probably will.
Yeah.
What's the good news that we can take from it, though?
Swerve Strickland's back.
That is the greatest news of all time, honestly, if you think about it.
I didn't know how much we missed him until I saw him.
No, I was missing him. I was just hoping he'd be back soon.
It's like, but it's one of those things of the roster's so good, sometimes you don't realize what you have till it's gone. And I think it's one of those things
best of... Best believe we're going to be rooting for him for the world title.
Oh, yeah! And, you know, when Ospreay comes back, it's going to be like just that other gut punch of fresh air because, I mean, 100%. I kind of mentioned it earlier, but we kind of, in 2025, we kind of had this realization of there is a big three now of the new generation of AEW, and it's Hangman, it's Swerve, and it's Ospreay.
Yep.
100%. And those are your three young guys, young-ish guys, that will be the foundation going forward of anything. They constantly, every pay-per-view, it didn't matter what they were doing, you know, you name it, they were the guys. So, yeah, look, I think
look at the run of pay-per-views from last year and this year, and look at how many times both guys, or all three of the guys were on it, you know, like.
Yeah. I think Full Gear for us is a different paper. It's a different kind of pay-per-view for us because started enjoying the show.
Of course.
Really like some of the booking results. I thought they were fantastic. I thought they were ballsy, like Pac beating Darby, you know, like FTR winning those titles. Great matches into Ricochet winning that title for the first time. And we love Ricochet, but really into the unbelievable great stuff of O'Reilly winning this big match, including the seeds of Marina Shafir turning on Jon Moxley. Into Briscoe and Fletcher having another okay match with it. While the match was okay, how they made Mark Briscoe earn it was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Into the reuniting of the Elite, which is the ultimate high. Into Statlander and Mercedes, which was good. And then into with a great booking decision in that match. And then into this with...
I don't think structure even mattered. I think this card just needed some reworking. Like, I think there were some matches that could have been maybe, like, moved either to the pre-show or to something different. And there were definitely times where the show's structure didn't help it. But I don't know that if you move the matches that were on and around that it would have worked better. You know, like, I don't know that that's...
I think it's just how the night was booked. And I don't know what... There's a lot of things in here that didn't just irk us a little bit. It really kind of grinded our gears. And I think that was important for us to express a little bit tonight. Because it's one of those things I always think about, like that Christian Harloff thing where he was like, I regretted going to that movie. Like, I didn't regret watching. I had a great time watching last night.
We all sat down, the three of us.
It was a great fucking time, man.
Dart got KO'd by fucking, you know.
Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe killed Dart.
Yeah.
The guy never recovered. I don't know if it's because he didn't like the match.
He came back for the beginning of Mercedes. He didn't make it through.
That's true. It killed him. He was EKIA.
KO'd in the Discord. It happened.
And then we got, you know, So it was a good night. I just think, look, we care a lot about the company and we care a lot about the future of the company. And I think sometimes decisions are made that are only for hindsight or for very nearsighted fucking moves. So,
yeah,
you know, we got the Continental Classic starting this week.
I mean, where would you even take Samoa Joe with the title right now? Like, where would you go with him if you were going to do something with it? Like, what would you do?
First person I'm putting him against?
Actually, let's be charitable.
Okay.
What would you do with Samoa Joe as world champion? If you were going to say you have to for the next 3-4 months, he's got to be champion. There's nobody taking it off of him. What the hell kind of title reign are you booking for him?
I'm not doing a rematch.
Sure. Get hanging
out. I don't like this precedent right now. I think Toni Storm, she earned a rematch. Mariah May earned a rematch.
Hangman, if Hangman Adam Page...
If Hangman
runs it back,
dude, no,
with
man,
Samoa Joe.
If that's our fucking World's End match, I'm gonna protest that we're not covering it. We will cut our podcast off before that match happens. No, but okay, I don't think he needs a rematch. That's starters.
That might be the best booking decision all year. I might have to go the other way and say he's the Jugging Genius again.
I'm telling you what, bro. I'm gonna go babyface Bandido at World's End. Just lost the tag title. Momentum, unbelievable momentum. I think he's going to be kind of, unless he's in the C2, I think he's going to be a little open for business. And then I'm running at Swerve. No. The MJF match. Just have MJF beat him at that next pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And then go MJF Swerve. Well, this all depends if Swerve goes into the C2.
Is Swerve C2? Is Swerve going straight
for the title?
What
they'll realistically do is...
Because if they're not doing the rematch, then probably just go straight Swerve, right? Because he was the person that came out. So it would be probably like Swerve and then maybe some other guys. I like where you're going with it. Honestly, though, this is why I'm saying this, to illustrate that this is going to be a one-month title reign for Samoa Joe.
You think he's just Swerve beating him at World's End?
It might be Swerve. It might be Bandido, like you said. It could be somebody else. It could be a fatal four-way.
I think the easy pick, if I was booking logically, that was a little fantasy booking.
We don't want a rematch, but what if that's Hangman's rematch? It's a fatal four-way. Swerve's in there. He's in there. And maybe somebody like Bandido is the other person.
No, I think you just run back the triple threat from Revolution 2024.
You could do that as well.
Swerve, Joe, and Hangman.
You could do that again.
I think I'd rather just Swerve Joe one-on-one and then actually have Joe beat him.
I agree. I'm saying I could see there being a scenario where that's what happens because it's the last pay-per-view of the year and they don't necessarily need to do a one-off, one-month build singles feud because they might not be able to get there with some of it. But Swerve is one who could. So if they're going to do that, they're going to do it.
But based on their booking tendencies, right, this is what I'm going to go with. What I think he'll actually do. It would be Swerve at World's End. I think Joe would beat him because that would... We've done a lot of booking in the past couple of years about avenging your losses, and I think that's something big for Samoa Joe. So he would beat Swerve. Swerve can go do whatever. I think you'd actually get a... This depends on where the Civil War is, if it started, if it's not.
Hey, that might kick us right back into more Swerve versus Hangman, to be honest with you.
It very well could.
Hangman might be like, you couldn't even win the title, you son of a bitch.
I think you'd be teeing yourself up for a situation where it's either Joe Darby or Joe and a new, freshly baby-faced Kyle Fletcher.
So the fun thing about Joe Darby is, do you remember who beat Darby Allin for the TNT Championship, yeah, Charlie?
So there's a lot of options there. MJF returning is an option, but I think realistically, that's what you're looking at for I think it's Swerve, and then either MJF or Kyle Fletcher. But Kyle Fletcher really revolves around the situation with the Don Callis family.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, no, I mean, Kyle, at least for right now, we know is going to be C2-ing.
Correct.
It all depends on where he finishes in that, to be honest with you.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. I'm glad that I threw that in there before the end because I'm just like so fucking fascinated with where we're going to be going. I don't think I've ever been more excited for a fucking Dynamite, dude. This is going to be insane. I have no fucking clue what we're doing. It's awesome.
No, dude, I'm very pumped for Dynamite too. So, yeah, I think Full Gear is a different one for us. So it's the first time we've actually been really, you know, a little annoyed about certain decisions with the big titles. The funny thing is,
the last time this happened was when fucking Jay White didn't win the world title. We had last major crash that we both had.
And guess what that was at? A Full Gear.
Oh, fuck. Is it this pay-per-view? Is it chopped?
Maybe this pay-per-view is cursed for us, dude. Nah, but thank you guys so much for hanging out. I hope you enjoyed these discussions. I think we I think we stated how we felt about a couple things, and it was a good time. It was a good discussion. If you're on Spotify or if you're on Blue Sky, you can write to us and let us know what you thought about this. If you're on Spotify, let us know. We will read it off in our mailbag in the following ESE episode that we do, where we're going to be talking about the Continental Classic opening rounds, man. Let's fucking go.
Lock it. All right. Anybody you want to be in there that's not in there? I mean, obviously, we have Takeshita and Fletcher. So just any guys off the top of your head. Let's just assume they're in separate blocks
Kevin
from each other.
Knight.
Yes, please. Speedball Mike Bailey as well would be great. Oh, they think they said they were going to be in, right? Or, well, you'd think they both want to be in since they were both in.
I fucking hope so.
Casino, since if they're going to do like, we're
a
tag team.
I'll give you a random one, though.
Sure.
Give me Hook.
Hook would make a lot of sense. Shibata would also be pretty good in the C2, I think. Let me think. Who else? Is there anybody else?
Kyle O'Reilly after that win.
Of course, O'Reilly. We talked about him already being in the C2 potentially. I'm trying to think. Is there anybody I really would want in there? I'm Bandito, obviously, but I wouldn't. Brody's still a good shout. He's been in many of them already. He's been in the first two already. So, I mean,
little revenge for Juice Robinson.
Juice, yeah, Juice didn't make it. Didn't get in last year. So, yeah, 100%. I think that's one they have to run back. Yeah, there's probably quite a few. Honestly, there's probably not a lot of guys I'd be against being in it, to be honest with you.
And that's what's beautiful about this fucking roster, man. This has been Michael Jordan and Coke Larry. We will catch you guys on the flip side. Nah. Cut that fucking music again. Nah, I'm just kidding. Love you guys.